This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been covering the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and hosting this podcast for 100 episodes and counting. It is now March the 11th, 2024. Opening day is now just 17 days away. And as of Sunday morning, we know who's scheduled to start that game for the Orioles, as manager Brandon Hyde announced that Corbin Burnes is making the start. It is not much of a surprise, especially after Kyle Bradish's injury news, but still, it's fun. A former Cy Young winner is going to make the opening day start for the Orioles, which last happened in 2001. I was actually surprised to find out that happened then, but 2001 opening day starter Pat Henkin had won the Cy Young in 1996. So he was 5 years removed. Burnes is going to be 3 years removed. I think that's pretty cool. In today's episode, I'm going to go over the Orioles' spring training performance so far before diving into the mailbag and thinking about how this year's Orioles starting rotation might compare to a 21st century Orioles rotation super team of sorts. So yesterday, Sunday, saw the Orioles in action for two games. A split squad hosted half of the Blue Jays, and the other half of the squad went on the road to play the rest of the Blue Jays. The road Orioles put up a big day of offense against their Blue Jays competitors. That was headlined by number one prospect Jackson Holliday hitting a grand slam in the first inning off of Jays lefty Yusei Kikuchi, who was pretty darn good in Major League Baseball level last year. Just one more exclamation point on Holliday's case for the opening day roster. The same game also saw Anthony Santander homer from, I believe, both sides of the plate. Maybe it was one of those days where the ball was just flying in spring training because the Orioles ended up hitting five home runs. Jays batters added one more. Or, you know, maybe the Orioles were just that much better than the Jays pitchers yesterday. The final score ended up being 11-6, an easy victory for the road half of the Orioles. Less awesomely from that game, the game did show that early spring sensation Albert Suarez may not actually be on the path to surprisingly making the roster. He was reportedly down about 2 miles an hour on his fastball compared to the eyebrow-raising performance that he had in his first outing. He ended up giving up 3 runs over 4 innings. If Suarez had looked awesome all the way through spring training, maybe he could have broken through into the picture, but I think any mishaps, of which this certainly counts as one, probably put him on the path to being Norfolk depth, which, to be sure, the Orioles could certainly still use. And it's totally fine because a month ago, absolutely nobody was counting on Albert Suarez to be anything to the Orioles. So If he is nothing, then nothing has been lost. The rest of the Orioles stayed home. They also ended up in a slugfest with their Jays opponents. Home runs were hit in the home Orioles game by Adley Rutschman, Colton Cowser, Ramon Urias. Oh, and James McCann, too, although we probably care less and get less excited about him hitting homers compared to some of those other guys. Not quite as awesomely, the aforementioned Burns, fresh off being named as the opening day starter, was victimized by the long ball, giving up a combined 5 runs across 2 home runs to Jays batters. After the game, he gave the usual answer about how he was just working on the cutter exclusively in one of his innings. That ended up, some of the things that he was working on with the cutter didn't work, so I guess we can think, okay, he's not going to carry that forward into the regular season. And so really the result of these two games is that basically everyone can get excited about the stuff that was awesome because it's fun to think about awesome things, and don't worry about stuff that wasn't awesome because it doesn't count. Is this logically consistent? No, but nothing says fans have to be logically consistent when considering their favorite sports team. I think with baseball in particular, have fun where you can, because baseball is going to make you miserable at least 60 times a year, or at least your favorite baseball team is almost certainly going to lose 60 or more times a year. To wit, last year's 101-win Orioles still lost 61 games in the regular season. And of course, as we learned last year, you can have a great 101-win season, and still your postseason experience is going to be no freaking fun at all. But as far as the possibly bad results from Sunday's games or any spring games to date, not that there's been much that was bad, especially when it comes to a veteran guy like Burns. You know, he's not worried about using his best stuff to beat batters in spring training. He is just there to build up the pitch count, work on stuff a little bit, so he's ready to go for the season. So the game ended up playing to a 6-6 tie. Really another reminder that nothing matters in spring training because it's not even worth playing the games until someone wins. Not even with the Manfred man in extra innings or whatever. But also, if you want something else to be happy about, Chase McDermott pitched 3 scoreless innings for the road Orioles and struck out 6 batters over that time. He is having a pretty good spring, has yet to allow any runs, I believe. So with these 2 results in the bag from Sunday, the Orioles' record through spring training games to date is a whopping 14-2-1. That is 14 wins, 2 losses, 1 tie. They are the spring training titans so far. It all gets erased after the last spring game on March 24th, but, you know, things have been going pretty darn well overall, particularly young players like Holiday, Cowser, and Kobe Mayo have been standing out. Even less young Kyle Stowers has been standing out while getting action against players who are going to be in the big leagues this season. Holiday and Stowers being lefties have gotten some left-on-left hits. I think so has Cowser. That is important. I still don't really have any idea how Mike Elias is going to end up making decisions about fitting all of the talented players who are on the MLB level already or very near the MLB level onto the roster. But it's something where he's got another 2 weeks to figure it all out. Much as none of us really want to think about it, there are any number of things that could happen between now and then to make decisions a lot easier for Elias. He's already started making some of the spring training roster decisions. The Orioles did make their first small wave of cuts from the roster on Friday as they sent 6 players to minor league camp. I think the guys who are worth mentioning for the sake of this show, in that they might matter someday, the guys who were sent down that matter are pitching prospect Seth Johnson, already on the 40-man roster, so he was optioned to minor league camp. And then fellow pitching prospect Justin Armbruster was among those reassigned to minor league camp. Neither one of these guys were very likely to get on the opening day roster if you were contemplating the situation a month ago. So, you know, nobody's burning questions about the Orioles spring training decisions have been answered by that first wave of moves. There are still 56 healthy players on the spring camp roster. So that leaves a whole lot of cuts, 30 to be precise, to be made between now and March 28th, opening day, when the Orioles will get the 2024 season underway. The news that Burns is the opening day starter fresh in our minds, I'm dipping into the mailbag in this episode for a question that has been sitting there for about a month. This one comes in from listener Ty, and I'm sorry to Ty, it's a bit less fun now that I'm getting around to it on the show, since we have learned about the injury delays to the start of the seasons for both Kyle Bradish and John Means that have come in after Ty sent this one in. But it's an interesting one. It's been in the back of my mind. So you know what? Let's talk about it today and think a little bit more about the Orioles rotation and what it's maybe going to look like this year. If you would like to get in a question or topic for a future episode, remember you can email CamdenCastPod@gmail.com. Before we get into the meat of Ty's question, though, I am going to take a short break for a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor. All right, so let's get into the mailbag. So Ty sent in an optimistic question, which is this. If you put together the best Orioles rotation from 2001 to the present, would the 2024 Orioles be able to have a better rotation than that group? That was Ty's question. I think it's pretty sad that this is even a question worth considering, but as we all are well aware, the Orioles have not exactly been synonymous for quality starting pitching in the 21st century. Really, the number of pitchers who've had several years of being decent or better, really even a 3 or more year stretch, it's just not a large number of pitchers there in that group at all. So Ty, in response to his own question, supplied me with his list of 5 pitchers who he thinks have kind of had the best multi-year Orioles careers in the rotation so far since 2000. And he went one further by helping me fixate on specific seasons from some of these pitchers by randomly drawing one of their seasons from the course of these guys going on a solid run. So this was the list that Ty came up with. The number one starter would be Eric Bedard. Number two, Jeremy Guthrie. Number three, Wei-Yin Chen. Number four, Chris Tillman. Number five, Kevin Gausman. And apologies to Ty if he didn't mean to actually number them like that. I certainly think Tillman probably deserves to be 2 or 3. But anyway, Bedard, Guthrie, Wei-Yin Chen, not Bruce Chen, Chris Tillman, Kevin Gausman. That was his 5. Now, I think off the top of my head, the only substitution I might make from that group, I might sub in Miguel Gonzalez for Guthrie, but really that's about it. I think Ty came up with a pretty good list. You know, other than, again, Gonzalez, there's basically nobody who had 3 or more good seasons in the Orioles rotation over the course of since the calendar, you know, the Gregorian calendar year started with a 2. So Ty then randomly picked a season from when these guys were good. So he noted he excluded Chris Tillman's 2018. That was not a possibility. But everybody else had either a 4 or 5 year stretch where Ty picked one of the seasons. So his random draw, the super team Orioles rotation of the 21st century to date, consisted of the following. Eric Bedard's 2004 season, which was actually before he was really Eric Bedard, the guy who was good enough to net the Orioles, Adam Jones, and Tillman, among 3 other players in the trade. Bedard finished that 2004 season with a 4.59 ERA, which in that context of that year's offensive environment, that was a 99 ERA plus, that is 1% below the average pitcher, an unsightly 1.602 whip, and he only threw about 120 innings. So that was a 1.0 baseball reference WAR season for Eric Bedard in 2004. For Jeremy Guthrie, we got the 2007 season. That was Guthrie's first and best as an Oriole. He finished with a 3.70 ERA, a 125 ERA plus, so 25% better than the average pitcher when adjusting for Park's pitched in and the league environment that year. A 1.209 whip, okay for a starting pitcher. And because he was above average and pitched a good bulk of innings, that was actually a 4-win season for Jeremy Guthrie in 2007. For Wei-Yin Chen, we drew the 2014 season when Chen had a 3.54 ERA. However, offense was weaker over this season compared to some earlier ones, so that was actually only a 1.11 ERA plus, still fine, but worse than Guthrie's ERA being higher in 2007, so 11% better than average. A 1.228 whip, 1.9 BWAR for Chen for that 2014 season. Chris Tillman's 2016 came along, a 3.71 ERA. Again, it was still a weaker offensive era right there, so the 3.71 was 114 ERA plus, 14% better than league average. Tillman also with a whip in the 1.2 range of 1.285, and he had a good bulk of innings. So that was a 3.5 win season for Tillman there, a big part of the reason why the Orioles were in fact able to qualify for the wild card that year. If they had really any other decent starting pitchers, two more, I guess, they maybe would have had a chance to win the division, but that's not how it worked out. Okay. And then Kevin Gausman in 2015, that was the year really where the Orioles kept jerking Gausman between the rotation and the bullpen, between the minors and the majors. He was not yet the best Orioles version of Kevin Gausman that we would ever see, or certainly not the best version of Gausman who ended up emerging after the Orioles traded him away. So in 2015, a 4.25 ERA for Gausman. That was a 97 ERA plus, so for being 3 below 100, that's 3% below league average for that year, 1.228 whip, and only 1.0 BWAR. So Ty's group, his randomly chosen seasons, adds up to 11.4 baseball reference WAR for that combination. So Ty wanted to know, would it be possible for the 2024 Orioles rotation to top that? As you probably already know, if you're a regular listener of this podcast, thinking about a question like this makes me almost break out into a sweat, because it's not very deep down that I get nervous about expecting any kind of good things from the Orioles. As we are all well aware, in my lifetime, by and large, and probably in yours, unless you're much older than me, the Orioles do not deliver success, and they have failed in a variety of ways over the 40 years of my life. So I'm not going to blame Ty for asking this question that then went on to cause the setbacks for Bradish and Means. Obviously, those things already happened in between the time Ty emailed me on February the 10th, and we found out about the news about Bradish and Means. It would be silly to connect those two things in any way, but also the superstitious part of my personality doesn't like to take chances, you know? And really, even after we know, okay, Means is going to miss at least a month and Bradish at least 6 weeks, I get a little bit nervous about there being a further jinx involved. But no, I'm going to get over it to talk about this for this episode because, again, it would be pretty silly, right? So considering, again, Ty's super team rotation only worked out to 11.4 BWAR. Like, for across five guys, that's got to be beatable, right? I mean, if things go well, Burns should be capable of knocking off 4 WAR all by himself. He finished with 3.5 WAR last season. It was a little bit disappointing for him compared to his recent years. 4 WAR the year before that in 2022, and of course, a big number. Off the top of my head, I think it was 7+ when he won the Cy Young in 2021. So, on the other hand, if we add up Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, Tyler Wells, and Cole Irvin from last year, that group only gets, that group was worth a combined 4.2 baseball reference WAR. So we need Burns to carry the weight probably of at least 4 wins. Then we probably need Bradish to come back and be worth at least 2.5 wins. And then you're talking 5 wins combined from Rodriguez, Kramer, Wells, Means, and Irvin. Or even if you're a believer in the next wave of pitching prospects, there could be some positives in there from Cade Povich or Chase McDermott over the full course of the season. And you know what? This is all entirely within the realm of possibility. It is just, it's not the only possible outcome, or I think even the most likely outcome. One reason for that, I think, is the Orioles were pretty lucky with injuries across last year's starting rotation mix. They ended up with 3 pitchers who started at least 30 games and 3 more guys who were healthy all year, but were either kicked to the minors or the bullpen for performance reasons. So that was Rodriguez, Irvin, and Wells, who all got demoted and moved around at different points. So, like, I mean, they were unlucky, I guess, in that Means' injury carried over from 2022, whatever, but I think the Orioles were lucky with the rotation last year, and the bug has already bitten the Orioles a little bit before the season even began so far here in 2024, I think, with Bradish and Means being where they are. I think there are still more unknowns that could crop up as the season progresses. It's just, It's, I think, unlikely that the Orioles will again have at least three pitchers start at least 30 games. That was pretty fortunate. And I just don't think that's going to happen again. But I also think the Orioles might be in a better position to weather some instability, because I think hopefully having Bradish back in mid or maybe even late May, you know, that's, as the GMs often like to say, it's like adding a guy in trade or whatever. Later season, potentially you can get the best prospect out of Povich, McDermott, Armbruster. If you need him early, maybe even someone like Julio Teheran is going to be good enough to be acceptable. I think all of that is better than you feel like you need to trade for a Jack Flaherty tier pitcher. Of course, there is always the possibility that the Orioles make a more aggressive trade for a pitcher, depending on how the season is shaking out, how the rotation is shaking out. There's probably still going to be a prospect surplus when, you know, mid to late July rolls around. But like, even if everyone is healthy, then there's the question of who can perform to at least last year's level, or maybe even better. All told, the Orioles last year had a 4.14 rotation ERA. That was actually 11th best among all MLB teams. And if you only count AL teams, the AL best rotation was the Minnesota Twins, who had a 3.82 ERA. So if the Orioles had shaved 0.3 earned runs off the ERA last year, they would have basically been a rounding error away from being the best rotation in the league. So, like, there's a little bit of room for improvement, but not that much. Much more room for steps back, I think, for starters. Bradish, highly unlikely to repeat a sub-3 ERA, no matter how much of the season he ends up pitching. Even if he's, you know, pitches 4 months and he's pretty good, I think he could probably be in, like, a 3.50 ERA range. That would still be great. I would still be thrilled with that. But again, it is worse than the Orioles' rotation was in that spot than last year. You know, much as we're all hoping that Rodriguez will look like his second half self for a full season, that's not guaranteed. Wells, unless his batted ball luck holds to the extreme that it did last year, probably won't pitch at the same level as he did either. So, like, you know, what do you get from all that, right? If you want to be excited, you can find plenty of reason for excitement. I mean, think about it as Corbin Burnes is coming in to replace Kyle Gibson, and that alone is a huge improvement, right? But if you're like me and you're inclined to nervousness, there's also plenty to pump the brakes about too. I think in general, people in Birdland are kind of casually assuming a number of things from last year will go at least as well as over the course of this season. And I think reality could potentially be much less kind, but you know, despite my obligatory pessimistic notes that I sound on this podcast, I gotta say, I'm excited for pretty much everything that I think I'm gonna see when my wife and I go to Camden Yards on opening day, including Burnes being the best pitcher to make an opening day start here since Hall of Famer Mike Mussina departed from the Orioles. Hopefully also going to be including Jackson Holliday making his MLB debut, because, I mean, they can't possibly start him in the minors after everything that he's done, can they? I refuse to believe that they can, so I'm excited to get to see Holliday too. Really, I'm excited for just about everything except for getting to and from the stadium, because I'm still scarred by that Billy Joel concert double booking that afflicted ALDS Game 1 last October. And even beyond opening day, you know, I'm hopeful that we're in for a fun Orioles season with a team that is good enough to overcome some of the inevitable challenges that afflict every team, even lucky and well-built ones, because, you know, the Orioles have a lot of pretty darn good prospects who are or seem to be near MLB ready. And even if they don't make the team when the Orioles finalize the roster ahead of opening day, they're going to be hopefully breaking down the door before long. And if someone scuffles, if someone gets hurt, whatever, there are many positions on the roster, really, other than unless it happens in April, the rotation or the bullpen, I guess there's not much breaking down the door excitement there. Although even then you might be really hyped for Wanda Cincharles or whatever. Charles, excuse me. So the Orioles, you know what? They seem like they should be able to plug a lot of holes if holes come along. And hopefully that's a good sign for all of us getting to enjoy another good season for the starting rotation and otherwise for the Orioles. That's all that I've got for today. I will be back with you next Monday to talk some more Orioles spring training. If you have enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you for listening and subscribing. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. This is Mark Brown signing off.